magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Go. Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to Touch Arcade Shows. It's episode number 384, recording live on Friday, January 11th, 2019. If for some reason this is the first time you download the podcast, welcome to the Touch Arcade Treehouse. I don't know, that seems like a catchy name, right?
No. That's, you're stealing that from Nintendo.
Am I? Oh, I knew that's too clever for me to just come up with by myself. Anyway, this is a mobile game.
Touch Arcade Bomb Shelter?
Yeah, the Touch Arcade Bomb Shelter is good. Yeah. It's a mobile games podcast. We're with TouchArcade.com, the biggest iPhone game site. Although most stuff is so cross-platform now, that really doesn't matter if you have an Android device. Like, most of what we cover is pretty good for you. Podcast is a weekly kind of recap of what happened in the week. Last week we did a big Q&A show where people emailed us. Email address is podcast@toucharcade.com, or you can hit us up on Discord. Our Discord's at discord.gg/toucharcade or Twitter @toucharcade. Pay attention to all three of those things. So we've got some more questions this week. Got some news stories to follow up on. A few cool games that came out. So strap in. We'll be for a good time. But first, what are we drinking this week, Jared? What do you got?
Well, I ran out of random beer, so I'm on my Coors Light again.
Oh, well, I'm on.
Although I did have I have a Mike's Hard Pink Lemonade in the fridge randomly.
I haven't had one of those in the longest time. I was at a bar. We were getting dinner, sitting at the bar near a place near our house this week, and someone ordered a Mike's Hard Lemonade, and I was like, "Damn, that is a blast from the past." I probably have not had one of those in 10 years.
You know, the crazy thing is that they're good. But you're just asking for it by drinking like a lot of those. Yeah. You might as well just put a pixie stick in your beer.
No, yeah, that's true. Anyway, so this week I got another brew from Salamoth, which is a local Naperville, Illinois-based brewery. This is their Old Order 11. So they number their barrel-age releases a Belgian-style double red ale aged in bourbon barrels. 9% ABV. So let's get weird. Anyway, as I'm cracking this open, I will tell you a story that happened this week, which I don't know. This has been like the talk of the internet for a while. So you know how people believe that their phones are listening to them for like ad-based stuff? I think we've even talked about this before, like the theory of my ads are so spot on that my phone simply must be spying on my conversations, because how else would it know that, like, I don't know, you know. So, but here's the thing, like, oh man, this is a boozy smelling beer. If only this podcast had smell-o-vision. Where was I? Oh yeah. So, I always was able, so don't get me wrong, I don't think my phone is listening to me. I think that we file enough information into, you know, Facebook and Instagram and everything else, that it's, you know, they have all the information they would ever need to, you know, run their ad algorithms to figure out exactly what kind of dumb shit to advertise for us. And like, so for me, most of my ads are like, you know, it's like, I don't know, like I get a lot of that. I don't know if you see this, I just go, it's like this weird, like, what is it even called? It's like a museum in a box thing. That's like this Lucite cube that has like, you know, like a piece of the foil from like a spaceship, and then like a tiny little chip of like a meteorite thing. Like, that's kind of like the tier stuff that gets advertised to me, because like, basically when I go into Facebook and dig real deep into the profile stuff that like shows you like what it thinks your ad keywords are, I'm basically like idiot single guy that spends money on dumb things.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, in my personal life, like a beef that I've had for the longest time that I exclusively complain about in the soap aisle of Walmart is, you know, the shower poofs everyone uses these days with like body wash, right? That's a normal thing, or at least it is in the United States. every time, like, those things last like a month before they like disintegrate,
explode.
And I don't know, it always, it never seems like they ever get like really dry hanging in your shower, you know? So it's just kind of like you're like, it feels to me like when you watch those documentaries and like how they make like fancy cheese and stuff, and like they go around and like wipe the cheese with like a bacteria soaked rag.
Yeah.
Like that's how the shower proof thing is always seen to me. And like anytime I say to my girlfriend, every time we're there and I'm buying another one, I'm like, man, I wish I could just spend like a little bit more money and get one of these. It's like a premium product that doesn't explode and, you know, isn't gross. And sure enough, just last week I got started getting ads like crazy for that exact product. And like, I know for a 1,000,000% fact, like I have never gone onto Facebook or any other social network and have been like, oh man, if only there was a premium shower poof I could buy.
Did you, have you ever searched for it on Amazon?
No.
Cause that's my latest Creepfest ad was that I have this really specific thing I looked up on Amazon that was getting advertised to me in my local news app. And I was like, it's weird. Like the exact picture of the exact one from Amazon. So I'm not surprised Amazon's dishing out people's like wish list items.
Cause it's never like one of those things that like, that was what was so creepy to me about it. It's not like, I don't know, I've been using the stupid shower proof thing ever since like, you know, the Old Spice body wash became a thing. Right. And, you know, it's never anything that I think about for more than like the 30 seconds. I'm like, man, these are so stupid. Like I wish I could buy something better, you know? So it's not like I go home and I'm like, let me complain on Facebook and like search on Amazon and like look in the Facebook marketplace for premium shower poof or whatever.
Yeah.
So enough,
your phone's listening to you, confirmed.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm just saying like, I've dumped pretty hard on people that think those things, but like, I don't know. It's like hard to come up with a conclusion that's anything other than like, I don't know. I can kind of see that, I guess.
The interesting drama this week was everyone is freaking out because apparently like the Ring doorbell cams let their workers see your videos or some such thing like that.
I don't care.
It's not encrypted video or something like that.
Whatever.
And all I kept thinking is like, if somebody's sitting around watching videos of like my empty porch, I don't care.
I'm not
nude on my front porch or anything, and I'm like worried about somebody seeing. I'm like, who cares?
Let me know if something crazy is happening on my porch, and we'll go from
there.
But yeah, I don't know. So anyway, moral of the story is I bought two premium shower proofs. They're weird. I don't know. I think the website, it's
Illuminati got to you. And
I don't know how you pronounce this. Boie is the thing that I have.
Boie.
Yeah. So I have officially bought something via Instagram ads, so I'm sure that means that it's just off the chain from here on out as far as
slippery slope.
Dumb shit I'm going to get advertised. Anyway, we got a bunch of, as mentioned, we got a bunch of questions this week, a few follow-ups and some other random stuff. Do you want to do news stories first or Q&A first?
Your choice.
Let's blast through the news stories first, because I don't want anyone to get annoyed because like, we didn't do any news last week. So playing a bit of catch up from last week. Some of these stories were posted back then. One pretty cool story that we posted was that the people behind Unity reached out and hit us up with some interesting stats. So to give you an idea of where this number comes from, it is games that run in Unity, which is a lot of mobile games, played by players inside the United States. So that's like this, the second tier of the filter. Third tier is with developers that have the Unity analytics stuff running in their game as the third filter. And then the fourth filter is, and they're sharing anonymized stats publicly. So four layers deep into mobile games, and 7 billion hours were spent in these games combined last year.
I'd be curious. So, I mean, it's interesting that it's probably much more than that based on who doesn't run analytics or has that stuff turned off or whatever. But it's also interesting that, like, what is the bulk? I mean, I would imagine, like, two or three games are probably, like, the bulk of that.
Well, yeah. So they gave me a list of the most played games. And again, these, you know, as mentioned, in the United States, running Unity with developers using analytics, they're sharing those analytics. So, you know, take that with, you know, whatever grain of salt you feel is appropriate. So first one, Happy Color. which is a coloring book app. So it makes me wonder, like, the a lot of these hours are probably coming from, like, here, let me just download this coloring book thing, give it to my kid, and he can just sit there with it open on his iPad till the iPad dies.
Yeah.
But then it gets into actual, like, real games. So, like, number two is Panda Pop. Number three is New Yahtzee with Buddies. Number four is Cash Man Casino. Five, Pixel Art Colored by Number, another coloring one. Six, War Robots. Seven, Word Crossy. Eight, Solitaire Tri-Peaks. Nine, Farmville 2. Country Escape, and 10 is Best Fiends, which I didn't realize that so many people played that game. But
yeah,
so of the United States, cities with game with people playing games in Unity with, again, you know, all the different things I've mentioned before, Chicago is actually the number one city of people playing games.
The most idiots are there.
Yeah, 131 million hours in Chicago alone amongst these games. Second place is Houston with 97 million. There's a pretty large discrepancy there.
Just imagine if we put your phone down and put all those hours towards something productive.
Well, right. So I mentioned that at the end of the article. It was like, so 327 million people in the U.S. Divided by the 7 billion hours. That's 21 hours per person per year just playing these Unity games with analytics that are publicly reporting. So I linked to a site that had, like, how long it takes you to read different books and stuff. So it's basically like it's basically like every single person in the United States reading, like Little Women and Jane Eyre, like both of those books, like Crime and Punishment twice, Don Quixote, or almost all of Gone with the Wind. So just to give you an idea how much time people are spending in these games. Pretty bananas.
Yeah.
Another crazy story that happened last week that I want to talk about on last week's podcast, didn't get really get to it, is that the Fallout Shelter versus Westworld legal drama. I don't know if anyone remembers this. We talked about it quite a bit on the podcast. When did this story first hit? It was like early 2018, I think.
I think so.
Let's see.
Or even late 2017.
June 2018. Wow. So basically what happened was the company that made it, Behavior Interactive, who made Fallout Shelter and Bethesda just published it, also released a Westworld game that was, when we saw it at GDC, it was like borderline weird because it was like, this is 110% Fallout Shelter with a Westworld theme on top of it. Like they barely changed anything.
Yeah.
So when this story hit, I was like, well, of course they just use the same source. Like why would they start over from scratch? Like that makes no sense. Bethesda's, you know, they considered the Smoking Gun to be, like there are some very, very specific bugs that an early version of, Fallout Shelter had that Westworld also exhibited. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, you would think that a big dramatic legal thing like that would end with something really crazy happening, but they amicably resolved the lawsuit and settled, and that's all there is to it. So
I would guess they just, you know, gave Bethesda a slice of whatever for the source code that they developed, you know, in conjunction with them, or something really pretty boring and tame. And I don't think that Westworld game is even making that much money. So they were probably like, whatever, take a piece of it.
probably. So Ben Brode, the game director of Hearthstone, principal designer and all this other fancy stuff, left in April last year. Went on to form a company called Second Dinner. Basically, I don't know if he directly poached like the best people from Hearthstone or if they all just kind of left on their own and were like, hey, Ben, heard you're just doing something. But they've got like the best people from the Hearthstone team working there now. Well, no, I'm just going to say the best, like some of the best, because there's still obviously good people working at Blizzard now. But came out what they were working on. So this was... I was expecting this to be more dramatic than it turned out to be because, like, everyone was, like, so I guess to back things up, like, Ben Brode was Hearthstone, more or less. Like, he was, like, you know, the Tony the Tiger of Hearthstone.
Right.
And when he left, everyone was super bummed, and they were like, oh, all right, well, you know, like, go do whatever. I'll support you in it. Like, you know, this is cool. You know, you make good stuff. Like, you know, whatever. And so he did that. And people like, I don't know where, how I started speculating, like maybe he's making like a physical board game kind of thing, or I don't know where that came from, but that was always like what I thought they were working on, or like something in PC space or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think most people thought the same. Turns out they are making a mobile game backed by NetEase with Marvel IP,
mm-hmm.
which the ultimate betrayal.
I think it's just a shoo-in that it's going to be another card game. It's going to be a Hearthstone with Marvel. Like, it has to be, right?
I don't know. Like, that's what had me so, like, scratching my head about this is that, you know, you take someone like Ben Brode that has, you know, is like, I don't want to say, like, single-handedly responsible for Hearthstone, but definitely, like, the game would not be what it was without his contributions to it. And, you know, Hearthstone's wildly successful. So you leave a company like that, and you basically can do whatever you want. I mean, like, you know, the easiest thing in the world is getting money from investors when you are someone who is responsible for a bona fide hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, all right, let me give you money so you can just do that again.
Right.
So I really think that, like, he could have done anything. Like, if you wanted to be like, hey, we're making, you know, a Steam party game, like, there would be people lining up to give him money, right? So it does seem a little strange. I was wondering if the drama was going to be a bit more severe surrounding this. It turns out, like, people, the most irritated people were just kind of, like, angry, disappointed, and moved on. You know, it wasn't, I thought this was going to be like a, like an aftershock of the Diablo drama, because NetEase also has his hand in that cookie jar too, obviously. So, but it didn't really get that far. So anyway, if you are looking for a job and you're in the Irvine area, and you do things that, I don't remember what their actual job listings were, but like, they're looking for people, they got money. So look that up. And again, just I think it's just Second Dinner on Twitter. Just type Second Dinner into Google, you'll probably find their company website. One story that we would have talked about last week if we would have time, is the Rusty Lake games getting pulled from the App Store. So just another Apple being Apple kind of situation. So it was like one random morning, like, people started tweeting at the developer being like, hey, you know, the Rusty Lake game, I'm trying to download them, they're not on the App Store, what gives? And the developers are like, what the shit? And then I guess they got some kind of notification saying that, like, they got removed because they're, like, spamming the App Store with duplicate games or whatever, which, if you remember, is the same thing that happened with the Choice of Games stuff. When was that? Like, a couple years ago, I think.
Not even, it was, like, last year.
Yeah, because what happened with that was, so they, if you're not familiar with Choice of Games, they make really good game books. I would download, if you're curious about, like, what they make, Choice of the Dragon, or Choice of Dragon, or Choice of Dragons, plural. I don't remember what the exact title is. It's the one that has to do with dragons. Outstanding. Like, really, really good. And they're not super long, but they're also not super short. They're, like, this good kind of, like, middle ground of length, to where it's, like, you can sit down an evening and, like, play through one. And be like, oh, that was really good. Like, I'm happy I did that. That's cool. So they released just a shitload of these game books, and Apple, similarly, was like, dude, you're spamming the App Store with these game books. Like, they're all the same. Get out of here. Apparently, like, not realizing the fact that, like, if you take a book and you rearrange the words inside of them, it's actually a different story.
If there's different characters and storylines, they're actually different from one another.
Yeah, and, you know, you can have a book that has, like, a drawing in it, and then another book that has, like, a completely different illustration, and believe it or not, that makes for a different book too.
What if they put the hammer down on, like, iBooks, and they're like, listen, listen. We already have a book with words in it.
Yeah.
We don't need more.
So, yeah,
that whole thing was crazy, and that's kind of what happened with the Cubescape people. But I'm wondering, I think that in the Choice of Games situation, they sort of relented, and the separate games are still out there. But going forward, they're only releasing new stuff in their, like, Hub app. And the Hub app was a result of Apple telling them they're spamming too much and they need to make a Hub app instead of releasing all these game books separately. And so I wonder if they're going to try and do a similar thing with the Rusty Lake people and be like, look, you need a Hub app if you're going to keep releasing these Cubescape games, because they're all called Cubescape, like, something, like, that's they're like Cubescape subtitle. So I don't know how Apple's going to end up feeling about that, or if this was just a weird false flag thing and they don't care. And
yeah, it seemed like a big drama bomb, and then, you know, later in the day they all got restored, so whatever. But so what's kind of interesting about Choice of Games, now I look at the App Store, so you're right in that some of the older ones are still available as individual apps. So the game book I was talking about specifically is Choice of the Dragon is what it's called. And I think it has an in-app purchase to just remove ads, if I recall correctly. Yeah, remove advertising for $5. Restart the game once for 99 cents. I wonder if you can only play it through once with, if you don't, I don't know. I need to look into that. But anyway, so they actually are featuring the in-app purchases of the Choice of Games Hub app in the App Store. So like, if you search for Choice of Games, you can see like right alongside Choice of the Dragons, you see Choice of Magic for Choice of Games as a $6.99 thing that's just part of the App Store, which is pretty neat.
Yeah.
I didn't know they did that. So, yeah. But let's see. So, you know, one of those stories, everyone got pissed and then turned out to be nothing. I'm sure someone got yelled at Apple for that, though. There's going to be another Breaking Bad mobile game releasing later this year. So I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, it was like there's a trademark filing for a Breaking Bad mobile game. And then, you know, a game came out that was, you know, just a progress timer game kind of.
I don't even remember what it was.
It was here, I'll show you. Let me show you a screenshot and you'll remember exactly what it was. It was just like one of these kind of like,
oh, I do
train exactly your guys kind of game. Which almost like it was like a almost like Epic Pet Wars kind of sort of thing.
Mafia Wars, like, but yeah, Breaking Bad.
Yeah. So no real news on what this all is going to be about, but I don't know. Or wait, no, hang on. Yeah, it's in soft launch, so I need to check that out more. So, you know, Breaking Bad game coming. It seems kind of late, though. I feel like most people that are really into Breaking Bad kind of, the ship sort of sailed on that, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of weird. Where's an actual Better Call Saul game? But I guess this could be that.
Yeah. That seems like a better time to do it. It's like a Better Call Saul game that like coincides with the next season or something like that. So old school RuneScape got its first like major multi-platform update that adds the Kibo Slowlands. I might be pronouncing that incorrectly, but this is kind of a non-story, but what I think is cool about it is that like, so not only is RuneScape, you know, this completely cross-platform MMORPG that like, you know, you just log in wherever you feel like playing and your game's there, but they're also able to do these like same day major content pushes, which I don't know, I think it's really cool. You know, whether or not you like RuneScape, I just think it's neat to follow based on like what these guys are doing. I want more companies to do.
Right.
Yeah, like imagine how cool it would be if like World of Warcraft or something like that was on everything.
Yeah.
So mobile port of Evolution, which is a board game that we've been covering for like 5 years now. I don't know quite that long, but it's coming up February 12th. I think it's worth getting excited about because it's a pretty cool game concept. The idea of it is you're actually like evolving different species to kind of like take resources over a watering hole. Is the basic premise of the game. But what I think is so interesting about it is that like your species that you evolve, you can go in a bunch of different directions. So like you can be like, oh, I'm going to make a carnivore and he's going to have the biggest teeth and the sharpest claws and all this other stuff. Or on the complete inverse side of the strategy spectrum, you can be like an herbivore that really just stays in one spot, eats a bunch of food and like really doubles down on defense stuff, or kind of like a blend of anything in between, which I don't know, I think it's kind of neat. And you know, it's a game that's been out forever and like really well rated, so you know that's going to be balanced really well, so that's cool. So February 12th, check it out. Second to last story I've got for the week is PUBG Mobile is getting like this weird PvE monster battling mode for the Chinese New Year.
Which that's pretty random.
Seems really strange. I don't. It's weird because like PUBG on the PC is like such a hardcore, like straight laced by the books battle royale game. That's, you know, a gritty military shooter, like no shenanigans or anything else like that. It seems crazy. Like on mobile, these different games that are in that vein are like the complete opposite. It's like how much crazy shit can we shove into these games? Like Rules of Survival has some kind of like death race mode and. Like now PUBG is getting this like monster battling mode, and like the monsters themselves are basically like loot pinatas. So it looks like you like, you know, go to a settlement or, you know, a group of buildings, you hit like the monster idol thing, the monster spawns and you guys all kill them and then get loot. So I don't know. It's weird, real weird, but people seem excited for it, so that's a thing. Biggest drama of the week, though, I would say. I feel like we need an award for that. Like, if you're going to award a trophy, like Stinker of the Week or something like that, goes to the announcement of Alien Blackout, which I think that this is a lot like the same situation of Diablo Immortal, in that, like, the game's going to be cool. People are going to like it, but the way they announced it could have been better, I think.
Well, at least in this case, I mean, they've been very upfront that this isn't the, you know, the next Alien console game that they're working on or whatever, which I think everyone saw this trademark name and assumed that that would be the next Alien console game name. But it turned out that that was the name of this upcoming mobile game. And so even in, like, the press release and stuff, it was very clear. It's like, this is not the console game that we're also working on. There's another Alien game coming. But nobody really, like, paid attention to that at first. They all just got mad immediately that this was a mobile game. And so I don't really know what else they could have done differently.
Well,
except maybe bigger, bolder letters in the press release or something.
I think the mistake that they made was like getting in front of talking about how the main character is the same character from Alien Isolation.
Yeah.
Which, if you never played Alien Isolation, it's a, I don't remember if it came out on console or not. It definitely came out on PC, because that's where I played it. I think like cult classic is probably a good way to describe it. Cause it was like, if you're really into the Alien universe, which, you know, me and my local friends are like super, super into Alien. So like, we would put up with the shittiest of shittiest games to play something in that universe, which Alien Isolation definitely fell inside of that category. Mm-hmm. So like, there were a lot of people, like the people that like Alien Isolation are those like hardcore weirdos, you know, that like just soak up any piece of like Alien universe lore they can and everything else. And all those people were really excited for any kind of like sequel or anything else that kind of like expanded Alien Isolation. And so I think by including the main, or including the character from Alien Isolation, kind of like, I don't know, prodded those people in the wrong way.
Yeah.
Maybe. Whereas, like, I feel like you could just as easily make an Alien game where it's like, oh, hey, the Xenomorphs are on a, you know, weird, you know, moon mining colony that no one in the Alien universe has ever heard of. And, like, you know, we're going to, and that would allow them the freedom to do things that, like, maybe aren't, like, you know, 100% Alien canon and stuff, you know, kind of like Alien versus Predator stuff or whatever else. So I don't know. People got super pissed about this, and they had to come out and be like, look, you know, this is not a sequel. Like, you know, where it's all this stuff, like it's its own thing and blah, 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 blah. But I don't know. It really just bums me out. Cause like the game itself, like, and you saw this in like most of the articles and posts where people were getting angry. It was like, people would concede that like the game itself looks cool, but it's just on mobile and that's not what they want.
Right.
Which, I just seems like completely asinine to me to be like angry, concede the game looks neat, but mad that you're playing it on the phone in your pocket instead of on your PC or whatever. Like, I don't know. So the game itself appears to be like a Five Nights at Freddy's meets Aliens sort of thing. Right?
It seems I think that seems like a really good fit. You're going to be like monitoring, you know, the different security, you know, systems and stuff like that, and tracking the aliens that are trying to get you in this ship and stuff. And as someone that could never get into Five Nights at Freddy's and never really bought into the whole theme of it, this seems like a much better fit, I think, for the Alien franchise.
No, see, like and you know, we talked about this last week briefly about like the Middle Earth Shadow of War game, and that like the Lord of the Rings stuff, like that just really tickled me in the right way, and I got super into that game. Like similarly, like the Five Nights at Freddy's thing always seemed like, I don't know, like the idea of like, oh my god, these robots at a Chuck E. Cheese are so creepy, like that just kind of never resonated with me.
Right.
So I don't know. Versus like the Alien universe, like Xenomorphs are fucking scary. Like that's cool, and I dig it, and I'm excited to play this. And they actually offered to fly me out for a press event on Wednesday, and I didn't want to get involved in the TSA drama with the government shutdown and stuff. So I didn't,
probably a smart move.
Yeah, it was some friends of mine that were flying out of O'Hare were texting me about, like, dude, like, I knew you fly a bunch. Like, this is a nightmare kind of thing. So, but yeah, I don't know. We're excited for more news on this.
Well, it comes out soon, too. It comes out the 24th.
Yeah, they're going to
been
emailing with them about getting an early copy of the game, which I think we'll have early next week. So hopefully we can do some more in-depth stuff on it. And, you know, the thing is, like, the D3 Go guys that are developing this, like, they make good shit. Like, I really, like, you know, you could argue all day that the Magic Puzzle Quest is kind of like a cash-in on both Magic the Gathering and Puzzle Quest. But, like, I don't know. I really like that game.
And it's a, like, good fan service.
You know, you could argue that this is kind of a cash-in on Five Nights at Freddy's and Aliens, which is probably going to be true, but it's also, you know, similarly going to be fun and whatever. I don't.
Well, I also feel like, I mean, based on the wording of their PR stuff, is it seems like they're pretty invested in this. The main character, the Amanda Ripley or whatever her name is, Ellen Ripley, like it's the daughter of Ripley from the movies, right? Or supposed to be something like that.
But
they seem pretty invested in, like, building that character out as more of a major character, probably to lead from Isolation into the next console game. And this is just further fleshing all that stuff out too, which I feel like is such a good spot for a mobile game using a big IP to do, is kind of be like a weird sort of like side quest or fill in, you know, the gaps between sequels or stuff like that. Like, I love that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like as a fan of a console or PC game franchise, when you get something like that, that's this sort of like additional fleshing out of something you already love, then you should be pretty stoked about that.
Yeah, so. Particularly when you consider this is going to be a $5 premium game. Like, I could see getting pissed if it was like, oh, hey, we're going to explore and expand the plot of Alien Isolation via this ultra free-to-play Game of War knockoff. Right. Like, then, sure, I'd be like, yeah, get pissed, because that's bullshit. But, like, for these guys, like, these guys are probably genuinely sacrificing their own success to release something that they thought fans would love, and they're getting shit on for it, so... That's cool, but...
That's video games.
That's video games, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, that's the news stories I pulled out to talk about this week. Again, you know, the first month or so of the year, pretty tame for game releases and news and things like that, because it seems like everyone races to get their stuff out for the holidays, so...
I think based on what I know is coming out next week, next week's going to shape up pretty good.
Yeah, next week's going to be bananas, so... with that, let's shift gears over to some Q&A stuff. Again, if you want to send us questions for the podcast, you can either hit me or Jared up on Discord at discord.gg/touch arcade. I just add them to a document for the podcast, or just hit us up on Twitter at Touch Arcade, or send us an email at podcast@toucharcade.com. Don't really care which you do. They all work the same.
Similarly, if you're super mad about a subscription being in a video game, you should tweet at us, because that's apparently what's happening today.
Yeah, that's the thing. Anyway, so first question is from Roger L. He says, hey guys, love the Q&A stuff last week. Figure I'd send something in. I'm curious of your take on. It seems like when Nintendo first came to the App Store, it was a huge deal, but now it feels like the only thing you hear about Nintendo on the iPhone is when you guys post stories about how much Fire Emblem is making. Do you think Nintendo is going to do, or what do you think Nintendo is going to do in 2019 on mobile? And with how much money gacha games like Fire Emblem make, is there any chance that the Mario Kart game that's supposed to be coming will be premium? So,
I think in terms of mobile, I think a few things are happening. I think their partnership with DNA isn't turning out the way that they thought it would, and I don't think they're especially stoked about it. And then I also think they thought they would get a lot better reception from trying to release more premium games like Mario Run with its free premium with a premium unlock or whatever. But then they're finding out that something that's more traditional free to play like Fire Emblem is making the sort of money that they were expecting to make from mobile games. And so I think that going forward with their mobile games, I think they're sort of tentpole franchises like Mario Kart and stuff. They might even just bite the bullet and go for a more Mario Run sort of premium experience that's like a really light Mario Kart thing with maybe some social stuff that gets you to maybe want to buy a console Mario Kart. But
I feel like they could do gacha stuff so easily in Mario Kart, though.
They could. They really, really could. And maybe they will. I mean, they did that pretty much with Animal Crossing But I don't think Animal Crossing is even making as much money as they hoped it would either. So,
well, but I mean, so if you look at Animal Crossing, like it's not Animal Crossing enough for people that are really in Animal Crossing, and it's just kind of like dumb for people that aren't.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's fair. I mean, I got bored with it in like 3 days.
Yeah.
But like, but I also think that their mobile plans are slowing down based on the success of the Switch. That I don't think they were I don't think they were prepared for it to be as successful as it's been. Otherwise, they might have been focusing more on releasing more mobile games. I think they didn't. There was supposed to be two or three more in 2018 that never came out. So, but I know there's bound to be something right around the corner, a new mobile game from them. And I don't know. We'll see. It's probably going to be Mario Kart.
Yeah, but, I don't know. I was kind of thinking, like, when I saw this come in, I was like, wheels were turning in my head, and I was like, I wonder if Nintendo's mobile strategy was kind of like hedging their bets based on the success or lack thereof of the Switch.
Yeah.
Being like, because I remember, you know, one of the few times Sean Musgrave turned out to be wrong, he was super pessimistic on people taking the Switch anywhere with them.
Right.
Yeah. You know, he was like, it's too big. It's, you know, too big for a mobile device. Like, no one will ever be seen on a subway playing the Switch or anything else, like, particularly in Japan and all this stuff. And so I almost wonder if, you know, Nintendo's partnership with Dina and stuff was them being like, all right, well, I don't know if the portable aspect of this is going to take off. Like, it's entirely possible that, like, maybe the Switch is just like a thing people have hooked up to their TV almost all the time, and like, you know, maybe they take it off when like their kids want to watch TV and they want to play a game or something like that, but that's not like the primary way to play. And then it turned out, like, I mean, I don't know amongst the people you know, but like amongst people I know, like I would say that, like, myself, I play the Switch, I've docked my Switch once to see how it worked.
Same.
My girlfriend, who plays the shit out of her Switch, has never docked her Switch.
Yeah.
And then friends of mine are very similar. Like, I the only person that I know locally myself that is into Switch that has hooked up their TV at any regularity has kids, and they're always playing like Mario Party and stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
You know, that's kind of stuff you play on TV, basically.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So I wonder if, like, that's why you're seeing, like, this mobile slowdown, because they were like, all right, well, we got to have some portable stuff. Like, 3DS is at the end of its life cycle, even though they're still releasing games for it, like that Kirby's Epic Yarn thing that came out or got announced or whatever. So maybe when they saw the Switch, like, being like, no, people will bring this places, they're like, well, I don't know. Like, let's, you know, Fire Emblem's making money, let's keep that going, and like, I don't really care about the other stuff. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
If their all their mobile announcement stuff, which is like 2 or even 3 years old at this point now, I feel like was like an appeasing shareholders move, where people were pressuring them so hard for so long to get into mobile games, and everyone kind of just instantly assumed it would just be this wildly successful thing for them. So why shouldn't they do it? Which I that's kind of true in some ways. But I think finally they were just like, okay, listen, we're going to do mobile stuff. Here's our plan, blah, blah, blah. But in their heart, it was like, we want to do this Switch thing. And it's been, you know, we've been working on it a long time, and we can't wait to like debut it and stuff like that. And then the success of the Switch has been pretty, I have to believe it's exceeding their expectations. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, because, like, if they thought the Switch is going to sell as well as it has, they would have majorly amped up production instead of, like, almost the entirety of the first year it was out. It was almost impossible to find.
But I don't see, like, a bunch of shareholders being like, damn it, Nintendo, release more mobile games. I'm waiting for you to do that. And it's like, they're just swimming around in all this Switch money, so who cares?
You know what I would do if I were Nintendo, and, you know, obviously we have no idea, like, what their actual contract with DNA looks like, but, like, I would get out of that as quick as I can and then find developers that make stuff that would fit in with Nintendo IP that is just kind of, like, not doing great to failing without that IP. So, like, for instance, like the Angry Birds kart racer game, Angry Birds Go. Like, I feel like that never really hit its stride, and like, I'm sure with the scale that Rovio operates at, like, that game's probably making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars and maintaining a small team, and everyone's, you know, fine with that or whatever. But like, I just imagine, you know, 90% of the back end work that they did with Angry Birds Go, but like reskinned as Mario Kart levels, mm-hmm. and then gotcha mechanics for, you know, like the paragliding thing and, you know, the wheels,
all the
and
items,
all the shit you customize your cart with that, you know, could have like, you know, star ratings and all sorts of crazy crap that you level up.
I mean, go crazy.
Yeah. That would be an absolute game changer. Like the amount of money a game like that would make would be absolutely insane.
Well, what's interesting about Nintendo mobile games too is like, and I feel like I felt this way about Dragalia Lost if it wasn't like such a freaking free to play game that just made my stomach churn. But like the playability of it, like they specifically wanted Mario Run to be this one thumb platformer, and they designed the entire game around it being this portrait one thumb thing that you can play while holding on to the handle in the subway or whatever. And so like I like them reimagining their big franchises into games that play like that. And that Angry Birds game is that. It's like a one thumb like kart racing sort of thing.
It's really good.
It would fit super well. Like I would love to see, instead of like a traditional Mario Kart racing game that you have to hold and play with two hands or anything like that, I'd much rather play something that's like a one thumb sort of crazy thing like that.
Yeah.
Just because I can play Mario Kart on like four different systems right now if I wanted to, the normal way, you know what I mean?
I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised to see them going down that road some more and reimagining games as like mobile specific sort of experiences.
Yeah, I feel like with the re-release of Mario Kart 8 on the Switch has kind of proved that like people just love that game. And like if they keep releasing it, like if they just called it Mario Kart 8 on the App Store.
Yeah.
Or Mario Kart 8 Go or Mario Kart 8 Mobile or whatever, and it was, you know, like 60-second races with like kart upgrades and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would be pissed. I mean, people would be pissed, rad. But like, you know, it'd be cool.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And this is just complete speculation. Who fucking knows what Nintendo's going to do in 2019 on mobile? Like,
I think there's a Direct coming up this month or something. There's rumors of one or something like that. So maybe they'll announce another mobile project. I feel like they're due.
Maybe. So. Yeah. So next one's an email from huge 49er fan. He says, "Dear Eli and Jared, I am admittedly a cheap gamer. I really only buy games when they go on sale. It saves me enough money to make my monthly contribution to the site." Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm thinking maybe I'm missing out on some really great games that haven't gone on sale yet. Do you know any? And if you do, could you please cover it on the podcast? I've been a fan for years and listened to every episode. Love what you do. You love what you guys do. Thanks. So I would say like the only thing you can really think of is like the Rocket Cat games.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Those are the games that don't go on sale, that only go up in price, although Death Road to Canada is as expensive as it'll ever be. So if you haven't bought Death Road yet, you're paying $15 for it no matter what. But I know there are some that don't drop in price like all the time, but by and large, everything goes on sale eventually, even if sometimes it takes a year or two. I think an exception maybe be Binding of Isaac, I don't think has ever been on sale, but it's also like not updated. I mean, it's needing updates for like widescreen and stuff like that. So I don't even know if I'd drop the money on that version. But everything else pretty much does go on sale eventually. I wouldn't say you're necessarily missing things because you're really waiting for a sale.
Honestly, like we've talked about this before. Like the App Store and iOS in general is a terrible platform for like collecting.
Yeah.
You know, so like really, you know, the way this guy's doing it is like the smart way is like, dude, I'm just going to play the shit I have. Wait until stuff goes on sale. Buy that. Play that.
That's I used to live by that with that, you know, I don't know. I used to try to do that with the Switch, but I got sucked into all the holiday sales and bought so much stuff in like the last month or two on my Switch. And I have so many games I haven't even opened yet, but it's just like so hard not to. But the Switch is sort of seeing the same sort of thing where it's like a couple of games I bought right away full price because I thought I really wanted them have gone on sale before I've even had a chance to really play them much. And it's sort of annoying because it's like, well, why didn't I just bother waiting and getting half off or whatever? And now there's a lot of games that were on sale for holidays that you just don't know if they'll be on sale again. So you want to grab them.
Yeah.
But they'll be on sale again before I probably get around to playing them.
I do the same shit. Yeah. Like what's been annoying to me about the Switch sales is that like you see like major tentpole like $60 Nintendo games on sale for like $20 off. Yeah. And like I don't remember which title it was, but it was like, you know, one of the big, maybe it was the Donkey Kong game. or something that was like on sale for $40. One of them was.
Yeah.
And I was man, like I bought that game day one because I was like, oh, this looks awesome. I want to play it. Never did. And now I could have saved $20.
Yeah.
Which feels way more significant than like, you know, in like if the messenger goes from like 10 to 8 or whatever,
right.
You know, like that's like, all right, yeah. Cool, whatever. Like Diablo, for instance, like that went down to $40, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a really good game. But yeah, on mobile, like everything goes on sale. I don't think, aside from the Rocket Cat guys who are just like obnoxiously stubborn about that sort of thing. And, you know, like good on them. Like I'm happy.
I wish more people were.
Someone doing that. But Death Ride to Canada, definitely you're missing out on. Although I would say at full price at $15, I would really analyze like what other platforms do you have to play it on? Because like Death Ride to Canada mobile is really good, but if you have a Switch or if you play games on your PC and have a controller, or I guess keyboard and mouse is probably just as good. But I would say that like of the places to play Death Ride to Canada, mobile is probably the least ideal.
Really?
I mean, I like it way more on the Switch. Like I can, I feel like on the Switch, I can very consistently get either very close to the end of the game or beat it. Versus on mobile, it's like, oh damn, like I didn't fat finger.
That's interesting. That's one of those games that I feel like controls pretty much just as well on touch as anything else. But I haven't played it on Switch much, so.
Yeah, when I hit the Switch, I played the shit out of it, and I was like, "Oh, I understand now. Like, this game's way easier than I thought."
Interesting.
But anyway, so I don't know. It's kind of a non-answer, I suppose. Next question is from Angelo W. He says, "More of a comment than a question, I guess, but just wanted to say that I agree with you on the answer to the Stardew Valley question last week. For me, I play. So if you didn't listen to last week's episode." Someone emailed and was like, you know, hey, why didn't you guys include Stardew Valley into your Game of the Year discussion? Because it's one of the best games I played last year. And we were basically like, I don't know, we were just completely over it from the Switch.
Yeah.
So anyway, Angela continues to say, for me, I played hundreds of hours of the game on my PC. So when it was released on the Switch, I felt the exact same way you guys did with it coming to the App Store.
Yeah.
And I didn't even bother downloading on my iPhone. Yeah. He says, this got me thinking, can you think of a port that worked the opposite way, where you didn't like it on the PC or console, and then it came to mobile, and suddenly it was something you couldn't put down? Thanks, love the show.
Huh. Man, probably, but I probably need more time to think of examples. But
yeah,
the weird thing is, like, we've said this so many different times, when mobile gets, like, a pretty big deal port from, like, a beloved PC game or something like that, it's like, oh, yeah. I remember last year, everyone talking about how great this game was, but I was never going to play it because I never played games on my laptop. So now that it's on phone, I'm excited to play it.
The Telltale game's a good example of that, I think.
Yeah.
For me, I think, if, you know, put on the spot, and I know I've talked a shitload about FTL on the iPad, but FTL for me is like, I like the game on the PC and I played it, but it's kind of like a slow sort of, I don't know, like if I'm sitting at my PC, typically what I'm doing is playing like multiplayer games with friends.
Mm-hmm.
So like while I really enjoyed the premise of FTL, like I don't know, that's not like I don't sit at my PC and play single player stuff typically.
Yeah.
Whereas when it came out on the iPad, like, man, you could delete every other game from my iPad and just keep like FTL and I would be fine.
Because you probably say the same thing about Civ 6 too.
Yeah. But I played so much Civ 6 on my PC like that. So, you know, similar to...
So you're fatigued a little.
I don't know if I would say I'm fatigued. It's just like, I don't know.
Well, I will say that the Switch is an interesting place because each week with so many new games coming out, you really start to notice how many mobile games are on Switch.
Mm-hmm.
And people like us that have lived and breathed this mobile stuff for so many years, they're easy to spot. But I always wonder if other people aren't. Like this week, Hopigo came out. And I was like, oh, Hopigo. That was like a really cool, like, touch-based platformer from like 2015 16 or something like that, and now it's on the Switch, like that's cool, but like there I don't think there's any way I'd want to buy it on Switch because I think its defining feature was that it was like a really good touchscreen mobile game and I played the crap out of it when it came out, so I don't really feel a need to like want to have it on Switch. So I don't know, it's just kind of interesting though because there are so many mobile games that are on the Switch eShop And I bet there's a lot of really good games that people come across that they had no idea was actually a mobile game first.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember Carter being pretty saucy about this when he still was writing for us, in that, like, it seemed like, you know, it was like people would look at a mobile game for like 99 cents and be like, "Ugh, get this fucking baby game out of here. I don't want to play this shit." But like, release the exact same thing on the Switch and charge $15 for it, and people lose their mind.
It's true. So,
I don't know, but good games are good games, I guess, whatever platform. And that's true too. I can't fault any of these mobile developers for releasing their stuff on Switch and charging way more money. I mean, I do the same thing.
No, not at all. And a lot of them translate well too. So.
Yeah. Just makes me wonder, like, when the Switch is going to hit a similar saturation point to the App Store, like, or if that's...
For me, I feel like we're there, but...
Well, sure, yeah, no, I felt that way for a long time. I mean, there was... and, you know, it's almost a good thing for me, because, like, I feel like I was spending way too much money. But there, like, the first maybe 6 or 8 months of the Switch came out, it was like every, you know, every, like, when the weekend hit, it was like, all right, like, what can I download on my Switch? Oh, cool. Yeah. 4 games came out. Like, let me grab all of them, or, you know, like, let me grab 2 of them, or whatever. And how it's like so much shit's released that, like, I find myself like going through like the new releases and getting like pretty down in the list and be like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that hit the eShop. Yeah. That's cool. Like, let me grab this game.
I found out there's a limit on wish list. It only goes to 200. Really? So I had to go through and just delete a bunch of crap.
Wow.
But I was pretty much just wish listing everything that looked even halfway interesting every single week, and then not buying as many games as would come out each week. So I was getting behind, and it just got too much. I blew up the whole wish list, and I figured, you know what? I got so much stuff to play. And if really big stuff comes out, you know, maybe I'll save it for a wish list game or something like that. But I need to focus on the stuff I have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I bought a couple, like, in the Switch mania, where it was like, oh, there's only 3 games out this week, let me buy them all. Like, I bought some legitimately bad games.
Oh, really?
Or, you know, I don't know if it's like, but sort of mediocre. Like, I don't know, like, one stands out, like Human Fall Flat. I don't know if you grabbed that or not. Like, I don't know. Like, very okay at best. And I'm just like, all right, well, I need to slow my roll on buying these Switch games, because, like, you know,
Well, I did drop a 60 on Mario U, so I haven't checked it out yet. Did you buy that?
No, but it's on my list. I really like the game on the Wii U, but, like...
I didn't play on Wii U. I didn't have one, so...
I never... It was, like, one of the games I was super jazzed for on the Wii U, and then... I don't know, just never really played it beyond, like, the first, you know, night I had it. But it was a really good game, and, like, Mario games are always good, and, like, you know, on the Switch, I will 100% definitely play that shit, so.
Yeah,
word. I don't know. So next question is from Jordan R. He says, hey, Touch Arcade Show, sending you an email for the first time because I'm curious what you think about the new phone from Palm, and he links it, so you basically just go to palm.com, you can see it. It seems like all the podcasts I listen to are running advertisements for it these days. So if you don't know what the new Palm phone is, it's, Jared, you should pull it up. Just go to palm.com. So it's a Android smartphone that's like the size of a credit card.
Oh, I've seen this thing. Yeah.
Thicker. Have you seen it in the wild though?
No.
Or just in ads?
Just in when they debuted it at whatever, like a few months ago.
So the idea of this phone, if you've never heard of it before, is, you have your main phone, you know, like your big phone that you use, like, you know, I don't know, like when you're working or I don't know, whenever, you know, like, say, you know, you have a, it makes more sense if you're comparing like the iPhone, like the bigger size iPhone to the regular size iPhone. Like, say you've got a, you know, iPhone 8 plus or whatever. And the idea of being like, oh, all right, well, if you're going to go on like a jog or go to the gym or whatever, you grab this Palm phone, which gives you smartphone apps and, you know, access to your phone and text messages and things like that without like the absurd bulk that larger smartphones like the, you know, plus size iPhones or like the you know, Galaxy Note or whatever offer.
Yeah.
So anyway, so you know, that's a backstory if you don't know what the new Palm phone is. So he says, it seems like all the podcasts I listen to are running advertisements for it, and it seems like a cool idea. I just don't know if I'm ready to straddle the fence between the iPhone and Android. Or, wait, I'm sorry. I'm ready. I don't know. this is weird. We're basically saying like he doesn't know if he's ready to like dip his toes both into the iPhone and Android world.
Mm-hmm.
He says, if you haven't heard of it, take a look. I know Eli mentioned trying to switch to Android before, but this might be a best of both worlds kind of thing. So I don't know. I listened to, it seems like we probably listened to a lot of the same podcasts. I know like a lot of the tech podcasts, a lot of the comedy podcasts I listen to, like all have the same, what feels like the same advertising rotation in that, yeah. Like it's the, what was that mattress? The Casper mattress, right?
Yeah.
Everyone was advertising that it was the Quip toothbrush.
Yeah.
Right. Quips. Which I actually, yeah. I just ordered one of those cause I was like, I feel like I'm brainwashed because like every stupid yeah. thing I listen to is like, oh, get the Quip. It's the best thing ever.
Yeah, right.
And now they're on to this Palm phone, which I don't know. Like I've definitely looked into it because again, like when I listen to a bunch of podcasts, when they're all like, oh, this thing's the coolest thing ever. This is the coolest thing ever. Check it out. Check it out. Yeah. I eventually check it out. But I don't know. Like it seems to me it's such a mess to switch between Android and iOS on a presumably daily basis.
I when they first announced this thing in October or whatever, I thought that's the dumbest thing in the world. Like, who needs that? And what's the point of taking like a second phone or, you know, whatever? And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, that's actually kind of cool. And I think it's adorable. Like, I love how tiny it is. But I also think that I wouldn't be able to use it. I wouldn't be able to, you know, my favorite phone was the one I had before I got into smartphones, which actually started with the iPod Touch. But before I got that,
do you remember which phone it was?
I think it was a Samsung, but I couldn't tell you the model number, but it was one of those ones. It was a flip phone that flipped up long ways to make calls, but then also flipped sideways to text. And whoa. So it could open either long ways or width ways. And it was like the funnest keyboard to type on, and I would text on it all the time. And so I've always thought about that phone as like my favorite thing because it was so slim and tiny, but it did calls really good and it did texting really good. It did everything else really bad. If you wanted to try and make email on it or anything like that, like it was not good for that. But sometimes all I care about is being able to get in touch with people or be able to have contact with people when I go out and about. And sometimes it feels like having a smartphone is a hindrance where it's like, you know, if you're at a bar and some question comes up, you instantly want to Google it or whatever, mm-hmm. instead of like using your brain and trying to remember something. So I can see it being really cool as like having sort of a dumber, tinier phone that you just slip in your pocket when you just need to like do the basics. And that's especially true, like you were saying, if you have a really large, like phablet sort of phone.
Yeah.
That maybe isn't like as easy to take out and about with you if you're going clubbing or something like that. So I don't know. I sort of like the idea now. I've warmed up to it, but I don't think this sort of thing is really for me. And I also think it does too much. It is kind of like a tiny smartphone, but it's like really dumbed down versions of like email and web and stuff like that, if I understand right. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, my problem is like, Apple is really good at trapping you in their ecosystem. Yeah. I think is the problem with this. Is that like when the Google Pixel came out, you know, a friend of mine that works at Google sent me one as like a review unit, and I gave it a good like week tryout. And the problem is, like, you don't really realize how much you miss the ability to like, oh, I can pull that up from my photos. Like, oh, let me, you know, like what I do all the time is, you know, since everything gets tagged with like geolocation, if I like think of a photo I want to show someone or whatever, I can like just go to places and like zoom in exactly where that place is and then see all the photos I took there and stuff. And like that just shit, just like if it's on iCloud, it's like wholesale does not exist on Android. And like my week of trying to use a Pixel was super frustrating because like when I went back to my iPhone, even though I thought I deactivated iMessage everywhere, you know, I put my SIM back in my iPhone and reconnected, and I got like 10 million iMessages that were like going to an old iPad that I haven't turned on in months and months and months because there was like still something connected to iCloud that was associated with my phone number. So when people with an iPhone tried to text me, they got the blue bubble and it went to that iPad.
Oh, weird.
So it was like, I was missing like 90% of my text messages. You know, I couldn't access my photos.
Yeah.
And like all this other stuff that, you know, like now that I'm into the Apple Watch, like, you know, the Apple Watch wouldn't pair with the Palm phone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I like the idea. It's almost like the iPod Shuffle or something like that. Like if you want to just go jog and listen to 100 songs while you jog, you can just clip this tiny little thing that doesn't even need a screen. Well, I feel like it's that sort of idea.
Yeah, and as I was thinking about this, that's what would get me to buy something like this. If Apple released like the, hey, here's the iPhone mini. It's like the same, like the iPhone that embodies the same idea as the Palm device, but exists inside of the iCloud ecosystem.
That's almost like an Apple Watch, though. Like if you left your phone at home and you have a cellular Apple Watch, you can do all those basic things you need to do and then some.
I guess. But the battery, I don't know how long the Apple Watch battery would actually last if you're like, oh, I need to send some text messages or whatever else on this.
Yeah.
So I think right now there's a need for like a secondary device. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The Palm thing, like the more I read about it, the more I was like, damn, I wish I used the Android stuff because like I would totally have one of these and it would be really cool because like, you know, if I'm like going out to dinner, I don't need my huge phone. Like I would just grab this instead. Like, cause I'm like one of those people that like makes a concerted effort. Like if I'm out with friends, like I'm not on my phone, which I am like a fucking rarity doing that. But like still,
it's just so cute. I just want one. Even if I don't activate, I just want one.
What was it? $350, which.
Yeah, that's kind of dumb too.
Seems like a lot for a
low. I'd probably pay like $100.
Yeah. So anyway, next question from James M. He says, all that talk of the iPod Touch last week may be super nostalgic. Do you think Apple will ever release a new iPod Touch? I'd love to give one to my kids instead of a more expensive iPad or handing them my iPhone. Thanks, James. P.S. I just joined the Patreon and you guys look nothing like I imagined.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I don't know. I take that as a compliment.
This is a topic that's happening on our Discord right now, too, but people wondering if there'd ever be a new iPod Touch. Some people think no. I'm of the opinion that I didn't think they'd refresh the iPod Touch the last time they did, which was like 2016 or something like that. So even though they didn't really massively upgrade it in
any way, refresh was like barely a refresh. It was like one
barely,
from...
but the fact that they did it at all, I thought was really fascinating. I thought they were way past the point of caring about the iPod Touch. So I would say never say never. Who knows? Maybe it's like a good selling little device. I think one of the arguments is that so many people upgrade their phones so often that even if they have kids that just want a little smart device to mess around with, that and giving them an old iPhone is a lot easier than buying them like an iPod Touch or something. And I think that's probably really true. I think a lot of kids just have hand-me-down iPhones. But I don't know. I wish Apple would come up with something that was like doesn't need a cellular plan, that could just be a little smartphone sort of, you know, basically an iPod Touch. I wish they would come out with one that was like, you know, an iPhone 10 without cellular capabilities or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that to me, like, I feel like they need a very low end device.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. Like if it's, because like, if you looked at the old school iPod product lineup, like you could buy an iPod. I think the iPod Shuffle started at what, like $100 or even less than that.
The Shuffles were $100, I think.
Like going maybe all the way up to, I think like the top end one was like $500 or $600 for like the highest capacity. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, but when Apple had like the full lineup of like the iPod Shuffle, iPad Mini, iPod proper and stuff. And like, it really seems to me that they need a super low end device.
Yeah.
To rope people into the ecosystem because, you know, the Android world is full of these like ultra cheap low spec shitty devices that still do like, you know, 95% of whatever anyone would ever want them to do,
right?
So it seems to me that like they should have that. Like there should be a $99 iPod Touch.
Yeah,
you know, maybe only has 16 gigs of memory, but like can run all the apps and, you know, work on Netflix and YouTube and like all this other stuff.
Yeah,
so I don't know. I don't have an answer. Yeah, listen, if I knew what Apple was going to do,
we wouldn't be working anymore.
Yeah, I would not be working. I'd be like sailing on my yacht off selling my Apple stock. Yeah. Anyway, I hope we were either more beautiful or far uglier than you were expecting. I guess we didn't look how you thought. So, last question that we have for the week is from Leia R. She says, one of the cooler things to come out of CES this year is a whole bunch of TVs coming with AirPlay. Do you guys still think it's worth having an Apple TV if this becomes a standard feature of smart TVs? I know you haven't been too wild about gaming on the platform, but how about everything else?
First of all, this news really super surprised me that Apple was going to be putting their technology and their services on other companies' TVs. And I think that kind of means Apple's never going to make their own TV for those people that were still holding out for that. But I also think it's kind of a smart play to get their services in front of a lot of people that maybe don't have Apple devices or whatever. And I also think it'd be really cool to be able to AirPlay to a TV that you have without having to have like an Apple TV or whatever, because AirPlay I think is one of the raddest, you know, technologies out there. But I still think an Apple TV is worth it. I think my experience using apps that are built into TVs is that it sucks ass. The UI is always terrible. The performance is always really bad. And I literally avoided plugging my TV into, you know, my Wi-Fi so that it won't update itself, so that it's still, it's out of the box, dumb UI. All it does is plug, you know, run things that I plug into it. And that's all I want it to do. I very specifically don't ever want to have like a smart TV, which is becoming harder and harder nowadays. So that's just my opinion though. Like my good buddy uses his TV apps all the time to watch like YouTube and Twitch and stuff like that. So, and he seems fine with it, even though it's like, when I'm over there and we're doing it, it's like the experience is bad if he's like trying to search for something on YouTube or something like that. But I don't know, it gets the job done, and I feel like that's probably good enough for most people. For me, I feel like Apple TV is just a really good streaming box, and it has a lot of apps. It can kind of do anything you could think of that you would want it to do, and so for me it's worth the money. But
I guess, but like when you think about it, you probably, I don't know what the percentage of use time would be, but I mean the actual time spent on the Apple TV UI is probably like 5% of or less.
So once you're in the app that's built into the TV, then who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably really true. And I bet if I updated my TV so I could run the apps that it could have, like YouTube and Hulu and stuff, I don't know, maybe it'd be fine. But since I already had an Apple TV, it's kind of like not worth my time to even try.
Yeah. It's like our bedroom TV, which we really only use to watch Netflix and, you know, Hulu and dumb shit like that. Right. I was going to buy an Apple TV for it. Mm-hmm. And then like I used the smart TV stuff and like, yeah, they're shittier. Yeah. I mean, like, no doubt there's not as good an experience as like the Apple TV, but like, as far as like, you know, picking some dumb show to turn on to fall asleep to, like, it's fine. Like it doesn't not
nowadays too though. Like when I signed up for Verizon, they give you a free Apple TV, which I thought was pretty cool. And so I had had one in my office. I had a second gen Apple TV in there that was, you know, I hardly ever used because I had gotten the whatever the Apple TV was when the apps came out. And so that became my main one in my living room. And I barely even used the other one that was hooked up to my office TV. And when I did, I realized just how outdated it felt not having all the apps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it was also slower and prone to crashing and stuff like that. And so I actually, when I rearranged my office, unhooked it and was like, you know what? Everything I use on this Apple TV is on my Xbox. And this is where I have my Xbox hooked up. And YouTube, Hulu, Netflix, all that stuff's on Xbox. So I'm just going to use that as sort of my media center for watching YouTube and stuff and Netflix. Which I would have ended up doing if Verizon hadn't just given me a brand new 4K Apple TV for free. So I was like, well, whatever. I'll hook it up in there. I don't even have a 4K TV, but whatever. The point being that I think a lot of people have things, too, that can run a lot of those things. Like, I know a ton of people that also use Xboxes as, like, a Netflix machine or whatever. Right, so, I don't know. The more places that it's at, the better. And I think I'd probably have to really weigh the pros and cons if it was, like, an issue about, you know, saving the money on buying an Apple TV and just keeping your TV apps, specifically what you really want to do and how good you want the experience to be.
Yeah, like, so for me, I read this on Mac Rumors and definitely like did the same double take. It sounded like you did, where I was like, what the fuck? Apple's just going to be on TVs now?
Totally unexpected. Yeah.
Because that's like a super on Apple move, being like, oh yeah, LG, you want to just fucking bundle our shit into your TV? Like, yeah, go wild. And I really hope that they, because we bought a new LG TV this year, so I hope that they do some kind of firmware update. That'd be super cool. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's just, it makes me wonder if the sales of iTunes content has fallen to the point where Apple's just like, you know what, let's just like make our technology ubiquitous, because like, people aren't buying movies and stuff like they used to, because like everyone watches streaming stuff or whatever else. Because before, it seemed to me that it almost seemed like Apple should just like give the Apple TVs away as like a, hey, here's the gateway to buying iTunes content.
Right.
But it seems like if I look at how my usage patterns have gone over the years between like iTunes content and all the streaming services, like, I don't remember the last time I bought an iTunes movie, honestly. Whereas like, when the Apple TV was new, so I didn't buy the first generation, but like the second generation one, it was definitely like, oh, hey, you want to watch this movie? All right, yeah, cool. Let's buy it on iTunes and watch it on the Apple TV. That's neat. And now that like the one with apps is out, it's like, dude, we're just like drowning in shit to watch between like, you know, Amazon Video, all the HBO stuff, Netflix, Hulu. Crackle, which has ads, and there's a couple different other, you know, similar apps that we either have ads or we're able to log in through Lindsay's parents' cable login thing to watch whatever we want. There is not a situation where it's ever like, damn, like if only we had something to watch.
Yeah,
which really makes me wonder if it's alternatively, like, I wonder if Apple hasn't seen like their lunch kind of being eaten by Google, because like Chromecast has been on like smart TVs forever.
Yeah.
You know, as just like a standard thing. I mean, like the shitty TV we have in our bedroom that I bought on some Amazon Black Friday sale a couple years ago, just cause it was like $100. And
yeah,
I was like, I don't know, like a 40 inch TV for $100. That seems crazy. You know, has the Google Chromecast stuff on it. So I wonder if they're like losing enough momentum from all of that, that it's worth losing Apple TV revenue potentially. Maybe. I don't know. It's a weird thing.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to wrap my head around that. That's even a thing that's happening, but I think it's cool. I don't know. The more services on the more platforms, the better is sort of the way I feel about it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I like my Apple TV. Like, I'm happy I have it, and like the you know, experience is cool. Like the, you know, using a little like touchpad remote when I go back to like using my TV in my bedroom with like the fucking D-pad feels ancient comparatively. Yeah. And like when the keyboard pop up happens on the Apple TV and I get like the little buzz on my phone, it's like, oh, that enter text over like here.
Yeah.
Like, that's really cool versus like on my bedroom TV, I have to use like the T9 bullshit, like old school texting to type.
That's how I feel when I have to input stuff on the Xbox. I'm like, God damn it. Yeah. And of course I have a 1-password, 30 character, crazy password that I have to enter or whatever. And it's like, damn it. Yeah. Hopefully I only have to do this once.
Yeah. Really crazy. So I don't know. I'm interested to see what happens with that. Like, I think it's neat, but, and maybe in the future, like, you just don't need an Apple TV, because like, if you have an AirPlay 2 TV, like you can just play your iTunes content from your phone to the TV. And maybe that's the grand plan, is like just getting more people to buy iPhones, because why not? The more people in that ecosystem that can blast shit to their TV, the better, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So yeah, that's this week's episode of Touch Arcade Show, I guess. If you got anything you want to hear a hot take or otherwise on, again, you know, podcast@toucharcade.com. You can tweet it to us on Twitter @TouchArcade. You can join our Discord at discord.gg/TouchArcade. You could post on our Facebook page, but I don't pay a whole ton of attention to that. So the other three things are better. Yeah, what else am I forgetting?
I don't know. Nothing.
Like, say something.
Amazon.
Oh yeah.
Patreon.
Oh yeah. 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 If you are listening to an audio version of this podcast, and like the person that sent us an email and apparently either thought we're way more beautiful or way more ugly than he was imagining, and you want to confirm your suspicions, you can go to patreon.com/toucharcade. Patreon backers get a video version of the podcast. You can see our dumb.
You can submit your hot or not rating
in real time. If you do any kind of Amazon shopping, we'd really appreciate it if you would do it through tetrarchy.com/Amazon. And I'm trying to figure out this week how to do a good push for iTunes reviews again. So I guess, like, if you are listening to this and you want to leave us an iTunes review, and you include in your iTunes review your Discord username, so like at whatever pound the four numbers, so like for me I think I'm at Eli pound 1337 or something like that, I will send you a free game.
I think that sounds too complicated.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just trying to think like what we could do to increase the amount of podcast reviews we have. We basically need to make it so our most recent review is not the
guy that hates us.
The guy that hates us. That's a problem we're having right now. So if you don't hate us and you actively want to push down the review of the person who does hate us,
yeah,
leave us an iTunes review. I get email notifications when new reviews get posted weekly. I think
I'd say either hit us up in Discord or Twitter or email and let us know what your username is. And
yeah, but the problem is, like, if you do that, you have to include something in the iTunes review that wouldn't be able to, because like I could go through and be like,
put your credit card number and expiration date.
Oh, hey, it's me. I'm Bonglord 420. I just left you guys an iTunes review 6 months ago. Give me something.
Yeah,
which true. I don't know if that person left us. I hope he left us.
You can also just do it out of the kindness of your heart.
Yeah, I guess. People. Yeah, I guess you leave an iTunes review if you want. Send me a message on Discord. Say, hey, I left you an iTunes review. Give me some for free. And I'll figure it out. You'll get something. I don't know if it'll be good or not, but it'll probably be good, actually, because I'm feeling generous these days. But yeah, so iTunes reviews, they're huge. I don't know if they do anything. They make me feel better. I just want our first iTunes review when you look at the podcast and not be, these guys suck, they hate Apple, everything else. So that would really just, you can just do it out of the kindness of your heart to make my day. How about that?
Yeah.
And if you want something for free, I'll give you that too.
Internet high fives.
High fives. Day. So yeah, anyway, thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of the Tetra Arcade Show, and we will catch you next week. And I don't know, leave us iTunes reviews. Jesus Christ, I can't handle this anymore.